I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Deep Dish Radio. I'm Tim Powers. My guest today is comedian and producer Dave Park. Dave is a member of the Dr. God comedy ensemble and the producer of Mockpocalypse, which is a television show on the AXS cable channel, AXS. If you don't get that cable channel, call your cable operator right now and demand that channel. It's a very funny show where comedians give their insights about music. Dave is the executive producer for Mockpocalypse and an on-air talent, but he has also appeared on IFC, AMC, Comedy Central, the TV Guide Network, and tons of others. He's in Los Angeles right now and promoting Bloodsucking Bastards, Dr. God's feature film, which is available through the good folks at Shout Factory. Check it out now. Here's Dave Park.
It's Deep Dish Podcast. Subscribe today and tell a friend about Deep Dish Podcast with Tim Powers. With Tim Powers.
So making a name for itself in comedy right now is Dr. God, and Dave as a member and a representative of that group, you know, every improv troupe that comes together is like, someday we're gonna make it, someday we're gonna make a movie, and then they start dating, you know, somebody interdates and the group falls apart. You guys made it to the point that a lot of improv groups want to get to. Can you walk me through how the group came about?
Sure. Yeah. So it started out sort of as an improv cage match group, and you know, there's competitive improv all over, I guess, nowadays. And this was back in, I want to say 2006 or something like that. I could be off on the year, but it's somewhere around there. And yeah, there were some other people in the group that some people have moved away and some people left the group. And Neil Gargiulo was the one who sort of started that iteration of it. And he asked me to play in this cage match group at Iowa West. And we went like a bunch of weeks consecutively winning. We beat the previous record. We just kept going. We really enjoyed doing it. And then they retired you after a certain point. And so then we just kept playing. We really enjoyed playing with each other. And we got regular time spots there, played other places around town. And then we started doing festivals. We started sort of going around to different improv festivals. And we befriended Matthew Lillard because Justin Ware, who's in the group, had written a movie that that Matt was in. And he came and he did the monologues in our modern ASCAT style show.
Right.
And we went up and to San Francisco for either Sketchfest or San Francisco Improv Festival. We did both of them, so I don't remember which one it was. And he kind of had like a, what do I call it? Kind of a come to Jesus speech of sorts, where he was like, "This is all really awesome what you're doing, and like I love playing with you guys, and I love watching you perform and all that." But he said, if you want to take it to the next level. And we kind of thought to ourselves, well, yeah, we do. And so from that point on, we switched over from, having rehearsals every week to sort of having business meetings every week. And we started sort of putting goals together and writing scripts together and pitching shows together. And so it kind of went from an improv group into a larger sort of comedy production group of sorts.
How did that affect the dynamic? Because when you go from, hey, it's fun to yes and each other and hey, it's fun to just do these festivals and stuff, and then you start having expectations on another member and relying on that other member. I mean, every improv troupe that I'm in, there's always like two or three flaky people. You know, were there personnel changes? Were there personality changes? Did you all grow as humans as a result of going from an improv group?
Yeah, that's a good question, you know, and I think it's kind of an extension of the work, right? Of sort of, you know, of having to rely on each other, and if you don't, and you don't hold yourselves accountable, then it can kind of fall apart. And like I said, yes, there were some personnel changes, but mostly, I mean, that just sort of happened for the most part kind of, I don't want to say naturally, but it just sort of worked itself out. Like, some people just, you know, it's a tough business, as you mentioned, and so some people just moved away,
right,
and other people just sort of quit, and it was just sort of a thing that kind of happened naturally. And then as far as the personality changes, I wouldn't say it changed too much. I mean, we just certainly got more serious about our work, you know, so in that sense we I don't want to say changed, because everybody, you know, was serious, but this just sort of this was a different kind of seriousness. It was just like, okay, let's become more professional about this, you know. If you want to treat, if you want to succeed in this business, then you kind of have to treat yourself and, by extension, your group like a business to a certain degree. And that's not, you know, not to say we took the fun out of it, because we didn't, because we love playing with each other and love being with each other, and you know, we are such great friends that it doesn't really, you know, it didn't affect that at all. It just sort of strengthened it.
Yeah, that's the intersection between art and business is not always an easy one, and it takes a very special person to walk that tightrope. And I'm always impressed with groups like yours, for example, where you can have that intersection and you can say, all right, you're great at this art thing, but I also need this script by Tuesday and it cannot be late, you know, and that happens.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and everybody in the group sort of brings their own unique skills to bear in that sense, and everybody you know, I had a sort of a different background, but a background that was directly related to the industry. Like, I had been working in television production since I moved out here. I moved out here and I started out as a PA, and I worked for a number of years at one cable network, and now I'm a permalancer, and, you know, or a freelancer. I was a permalancer there.
Right.
And, you know, so I had sort of a television production background. And Brian O'Connell, the director, he went to North Carolina School of the Arts with, like, David Gordon Green and Jody Hill. And so he had directed features before he directed Angry White Men and another feature. So, you know, he had that sort of production background, film school background.
Mm-hmm.
Justin Ware, as I said, had a screenwriting background. Neil was also working in television production. And then Sean runs a number of festivals out here and has a theatrical background from Emerson College, and, you know, so everybody had their own sort of, like I said, specialized angle, and that really brought it to bear. It wasn't like anybody was, you know, somebody who was just on a lark took an improv class and was like, this is fun, but was an actual, you know, an insurance actuary or something like that. And they're in the meantime, like, everybody came out here with the intention of being involved in the, you know, film, TV world.
Right. Yeah, the explosion.
But also, everybody had the art. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
That's okay. The explosion of improv in the last 15 years in Los Angeles has been huge. You know, the influence from New York and Chicago is pretty obvious, but, you know, I came to town 10 years ago and there were a handful of outlets, and not everybody was in an improv troupe. And now everywhere you go, it's like Liverpool in the 60s. Everybody's in a band, you know?
No, totally, man. I mean, it really feels like it's reaching critical mass, or maybe a tipping point. It's really huge, and there's so many outlets. And ultimately, that's good, because, you know, more people get a chance to get up there and perform. And it sort of, it went from being this sort of esoteric kind of comedic art form to like a bona fide comedic outlet and an art form. I think that's great.
Yeah, it really does. But what it does to one internally, especially, you know, if you follow guys like Dell and Viola Spolin, you know, and you really get to the nuance of the theory of improv, it's surprising that it's as popular as it is and people are as selfish as they are in a community,
yeah.
You know?
Sure.
But
sure. People are people. I mean, yeah, that's unfortunate that's the case, but you know, you can't change human nature, I suppose.
I suppose not. But then there's the groups like yours, and the core five Upright Citizens Brigade guys, and you know, well, for every 10,000 groups, there's four or five that start to make a name for themselves, and you guys have done that to the point where folks can see Dr. God Weekly, and the Mockpocalypse show on the Axis cable channel. Can you tell me how that came about?
Yeah, so that came about. Neil Gargiulo was working there as a writer for a show that is now canceled called Axis Live, and which Ryan Stout, incidentally, who's on Mockpocalypse, was the host of.
Right.
And then he went on to be a writer-producer for them, and then he brought me on board, and we were working in promos and other sort of departments here and there. And we, you know, sort of looked at the landscape of their programming, and I saw that they had comedy and that they had music programming, right? They didn't have any sort of comedy shows about music. So we sort of wrote up the idea of what we thought the show could be, which is sort of, you know, it is that green screen, evergreen style, like I Love the 80s or Best Week Ever, but we didn't want it to be topical, like I said, we wanted it to be evergreen.
Right.
So we took you know, genres and categories of music as opposed to like music news, you know, and we pitched that. We had already done another show for them, which was sort of a backdoor pilot of sorts, or a proof of concept, which was a Super Bowl party show. So it was like it was about the history of Super Bowl parties and like Super Bowl culture, and that was called the Super Party Super Special. And it was sort of a very similar in terms of the format and structure, but that sort of, you know, was the template for what we were going to end up doing with Mockpocalypse. And so yeah, so we pitched that to the powers that be over there, and yeah, now here we are.
Yeah, and you're three seasons in. You know, and it transcends beyond the core group of Dr. God. You've got guys like Abe Benrubi, who, by the way, I worked with his dad in radio 18 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, his dad is a guy, is Asher Benrubi. He was called Smash, and worked at a handful of stations in St. Louis, and just the nicest guy you'd ever want to meet, and very proud of Abe. Which is
really?
So it's a,
yeah, he has reason to be. Abe's a great guy and super talented, and We love him. He did one of our Dr. God shows as a monologist in the improv festival. I want to say like a month and a half ago or so. But yeah, so we were able to sort of open up our stable to people that we have worked with over the past 10 years or so, or however long. I think it's almost 10 years at this point. So we were able to sort of open those doors up and bring in people that we either, you know, had a relationship with or sort of wanted to, like, you know, guys like Jimmy Pardo and Jamie Kaler. I sort of tangentially knew through people,
yeah,
but and Frangela, but you know, I didn't directly know them, but I was an admirer of their work. And you know, to suddenly be in an executive producer position where you're able to sort of, you know, to hire them, to bring them on board if, you know, if they wanted to, which they did, thankfully,
yeah,
was great, you know, because you're able to now be a contemporary and a peer of theirs, and you know, there's a mix of, you know, really established talent like that, and also emergent talent, you know, maybe people that that aren't necessarily household names, or you know, don't tour the circuit to the same degree that some people do, but are just as, you know, just as talented. And so it was great being able to, and it has been great being able to sort of give them an outlet.
Right, and it's a little deeper than the shows you mentioned earlier. Instead of going, hey, remember Convoy? That was a dumb song. On to the next thing. There's actually some content to it. There's some thought. You're actually getting opinions rather than going, Rubik's Cubes were dumb, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And we wanted to kind of differentiate ourselves that way, you know, because those shows, when it's just like, hey, remember this thing, there's not a lot of substance there. And one of the things that I love about this job and about the show and about music is all of the stories and the histories behind it, all the stuff that... you know, maybe you don't see in the liner notes, you know, the stuff in between the liner notes, as it were. You know, like, just all the amazing backstories that are out there and facts. And, you know, when you have consulting producers like Dave Holmes, who's a walking encyclopedia of music knowledge, it really lends itself to that. I mean, he's able to bring stuff to bear when we're coming up with the creative on it. And he's like, oh, how about this? And you're like, wait, we just researched that for hours and didn't have any idea that was a thing. So he's able to sort of supply examples of stuff, you know, off the top of his head that maybe initially fell through the cracks research-wise. But, you know, that's what's great about this process. And that's what, again, like, people really respond to that. And a lot of people out there, we get messages and, you know, people tell us, they're like, it feels like you're laughing and learning something at the same time, you know, which is great. That's what we want. We want people to sort of get a deeper understanding of the genre of music and the history of it, but also, you know, be entertained.
It strikes me as I listen to you tell your perspective of the show that it reminds me of what radio used to be 20 years ago, where you'd play a record and the jock would come on and go, hey, you know, that was the Rolling Stones. You know, they recorded that song in a castle when they were all completely and now, you know, there's radio's dead. The talent can only speak,
sadly,
you know, for 15 seconds, and they can't get into that. So it's up to the hardcore fans to actually be able to tell these stories, and they either get spread word of mouth or on a show like this. It's really kind of an interesting...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Interesting thing.
Yeah. No. It really is, and it's sad that that's the state of, you know, of radio today. But it, you know, it's good in the sense that we're able to sort of have that outlet and provide you with that knowledge.
It's true. And so, what kind of doors has Mockpocalypse opened for Dr. God and for you, Dave?
Yeah. Well, for us as a group, I mean, we're already. Can't really go into details, but we're working on another cable pilot right now that we will be going into production on soon. So I mean, I think it shows that we as a group, you know, like I said, we all have our individual sort of backgrounds when it comes to production, but it shows that we as a group, you know, have an established show that is successful and that, you know, we're sort of a one-stop shop for you know, creative and production in general and in large. So I think, you know, in that sense, it shows that we have the skills to pay the bills, I guess, as it were. And then, you know, individually, it just, it's the sort of culmination of a lot of hard work out here, you know, and working my way up, like I said, starting as a PA and going to AP and second producer and producer and, rising the ranks, as it were, and you know, just enduring the cliche that it's a marathon out here and not a sprint, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of glazed over it, but it was a lot of work for you guys. It's not like you were, you know, a receptionist at a bank and you're like, I'm going to take an improv class at the Ha Ha House. And then two weeks later, somebody goes, God damn, you're brilliant. Sign here and you're on TV.
No,
it wasn't like that at all.
No. And that's the thing is like, you know, a friend of mine, Lloyd Alquist, who's Epic Lloyd of, Epic Rap Battles of History. That's what it's called, Epic Rap Battles, or right. I always forget the name of it. But he, you know, I've known him through the years, and, you know, that is huge. That show's absolutely massive, and, you know, he's touring the world right now with it. And I was talking to him because I had read some article after it sort of first blew up. He's like, yeah, every angle is sort of like overnight success. He's like, yeah, overnight success, 14 years in the making, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's, there were 14 years of him studying improv and coaching teams and teaching improv, you know, before that came about. And similarly, like with us, there's a lot of hard work that was behind, you know, our recent success. And there still is a lot of hard work to do. And it doesn't really happen that way where it's just, yeah, you know, like you're saying, that model of somebody being in a bank or whatever and then being discovered. I mean, it really, I can't name every project that didn't work to get to the ones that did because there's so many of them, you know?
Right.
It's just, there's still a lot of scripts that we're sitting on where it's like, oh, well, that is not as sophisticated as, you know, what we're trying to do down the line, or like, that was great, but it's kind of dated now, you know, or it's just that thing where you just have to constantly be working, always be working, you know?
You're right. I mean, people say, I want to be the Beatles. And you look at what they did in Hamburg, you know, just to bring it back to music that, you know, these are 18-year-old kids playing in Hamburg, playing 10-hour sets, playing guitar for 10 hours a day. And that's why they were who they were. And, you know, with any group, whether it's comedy, whether it's improv, whether it's, you know, a writing group, you put in that 10,000 hours and there you are. And sometimes you're a group like Dr. God who gets a TV show and other projects that we'll talk about in a second. And sometimes you're, you know, Mama's Apple Pie in Kansas City, Missouri. And, you're like, yeah, I remember those days. Those were good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the thing is, like, some people, it just depends on their intent. Like, some people just want to, and that's fine. They just want to do improv for improv's sake, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. That's totally great. But that wasn't our intention. You know, we wanted to do more than that. And so that's sort of what we set our sights on.
Right. Who can you point to as influences? You know, no, it's kind of uncharted waters. But, you know, were there other groups, other things that you looked at and said, well, we could base it pretty loosely on this? Or did you make it completely up as you went?
No, I mean, like the Broken Lizard guys, they all went to my college, Colgate University, but like 10 or 11 years before me.
Wow.
And they founded an improv group there called Charred Goosebeak that I then joined once I was at Colgate.
Right.
And then they came on campus when they had Super Troopers, and they got in touch with me through like the activities board or the Colgate activity board or something. And because they wanted to meet the people in the improv group, and they all invited us to see the movie, and then we all hung out and I stayed in touch with them. And then when I graduated, I went down to Mexico and worked on Club Dread, which was like basically my first job, out of school. And so like, they certainly were an example of, you know, a group of guys who went from being just an improv comedy group to, you know, making movies, which initially was Puddle Cruiser, then Super Troopers, and then Club Dread, and then, you know, Beer Fest and Duke's Hazard and all this other stuff. So they definitely were an example of a group of people that sort of did it, you know, on their own. And again, that's another reason why it's so great to be able to work with them again and have those guys on Mark Apocalypse, which is awesome. And also it's just great to ask advice on how to, you know, certain things done. You know, they basically crowdfunded Super Troopers 2, and they had us be a part of the this sort of like telethon that they had to raise the money. And just seeing them do that and seeing them work over the years and sort of, you know, be successful at it has been very, very helpful. So they were certainly one example.
And you get to work in tandem, you know, rather than competitively. Of course, there's some competition, but not as much as you might think. You learn, and it's a very friendly relationship between the two of you.
Totally, yeah. I mean, they tweeted, you know, they tweeted about our movie and telling people to go see it and stuff. And I wouldn't consider it a competition at all. It's, you know, there's plenty of room in the sandbox for people to play.
Movie, you say? You must mean Bloodsucking Bastards.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, what a convenient segue.
We're professionals, David.
Yes, indeed.
So, Bloodsucking Bastards, the new Dr. God feature film production, right?
That's correct, yeah. That is right.
So
available on VOD right now.
Through the good people at Shoutcast, right? Or Shout Factory. Through the good people at Shout Factory.
Shout Factory, yeah. They were the ones who picked up the distribution. So, yeah, so we presented that at Slam Dance this past March. And a couple different companies were interested in it, and Shout Factory was the best fit for sure. And they have just been awesome with pushing the film and getting the word out. And it's a really nice, you know, fit for us there with this movie. And, you know, visiting the offices and doing some promo stuff for them, I was like a kid in a candy store because they have so many titles that they've re-released on Blu-ray and DVD of movies that I absolutely love, you know, whether it's old John Carpenter stuff like They Live and Assault on Precinct 13 and stuff like that,
right?
Or, you know, like Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, which is like one of my favorite horror movies for a variety of reasons. But like walking on WKRP in Cincinnati and like all this stuff, you know, you walk around there and it's just such a cool thing. I used to work at my first job in high school was working at a video store. Remember those?
Yeah, I do.
In Dallas, Texas. And it's still around, which is crazy to me. I was just there doing some PR stuff for the movie. And Premiere Video in Dallas, Texas has somehow weathered the storm of Netflix and video on demand. But
wow.
Anyway, back, Shout Factory. So it's a great fit, and we're really happy with all they've done with it.
Well, and Shout Factory really does such a great job with you know, the care and the curation that they do. For example, the WKRP sets that come out, they worked through a lot of the music licensing issues that prevented WKRP from really being enjoyable in its previous video incarnations.
Exactly.
Or
and it makes sense that they're able to do that because the founders of the company all came out of Rhino Records. Like, they're the same people that created Rhino Records.
Right.
And so it would make sense that they, you know, can navigate the sort of labyrinthine world of music licensing and stuff.
Oh, I do love the Rhino Records, too. The 80s and 90s and with Rhino was just so beautiful. So on your video on demand device, your Roku, your Amazon Fire
Hulu,
TV,
iTunes,
Hulu.
You can check it out at all those different places.
Well, let's tell them what the movie's all about.
Sure. Yeah. So it's like you know, Office Space meets Shaun of the Dead or Fright Night in some ways. Pedro Pascal, who is fantastic and was great in Game of Thrones, and he's great right now on Narcos. He compared it to, he's like, I don't know what he says, like Office Space and Shaun of the Dead, but for him, and I think he's right to a certain degree because I just rewatched it. He's like, it reminds me more of Fright Night, which is another great 80s movie, the original one.
Sure.
You know, it's sort of about that. It's about a corporate takeover of an office by vampires. And
so it's about radio.
yeah, nice. It's about a group of individuals who find themselves beset by Bloodsucking Bastards, by a group of vampires who are taking over the company and actually making the company bigger, ironically enough. in terms of sales, but worse in terms of souls. But yeah, so sort of took the script that Ryan Mitz originally wrote, and a producer friend of ours brought it to us and was like, I think that there's more in this than is there. And we reworked it and rewrote it and sort of rejiggered certain things and cut out certain plots and reworked roles to sort of better suit our needs. And then we started getting, you know, talent attached to it, like Fran Kranz, and Cabin in the Woods, and other Joss Whedon stuff. And Joey Kern, who is also from Super Troopers, who's great, who's from Cabin Fever. And Joel Murray, who we knew from the improv community at I.O., and from Mad Men. And Pedro Pascal, I already mentioned, Emma Fitzpatrick from the Collection series. And then we cast ourselves in a bunch of the other sort of supporting roles, and Brian directed. And yeah, we're super excited about, you know, A, making it, and then B, actually getting distribution so that people can see it, you know.
And you didn't have to worry about theater distribution. You you really took advantage of the technology that we have now, which is phenomenal. You don't have to stand in line. You can watch it right now.
Yeah, which is great. We did have a theatrical release too. We opened in 13 North American cities, and we played at, down the street at the Lamley NoHo 7 here in Los Angeles, which is great because it's practically walking distance from my house.
Nice.
It happens, you know, simultaneously now. So, you know, the theatrical release happened the exact same time as VOT release, which is great in the sense that, like, you know, talking to friends that I grew up with who maybe weren't in one of those 13 cities, or family members for that matter, you know, who are like, oh, it's not playing in the theater. It's like, well, you can just walk into your living room and order it right now. So that was awesome, you know, and like you're saying, in terms of the technology available to us, it's been a real treat to be able to, you know, get it out to a variety of different places, like get it out ubiquitously, simultaneously. So that's been great.
So there you are. No matter where you are in the world right now, Shout Factory has Bloodsucking Bastards, and you can rent it, you can own it, you can watch it on demand right this very minute. If you dig the office comedies and you dig the vampire and zombie genre, this is a nice match of the two. And of course, you get the great trademark comedy of Dr. God.
And you get
to see a lot of the folks that you know from Mockpocalypse, and a lot of folks you watch it and you go, I know that guy, you know, it's the guy from that thing.
Yep. Yeah, totally.
And there you are. So that's available to you. What's next?
Yeah, well, like I said, we're working on a cable pilot right now, and
you really can't talk too much about it. Right.
Yeah, I can't talk too much about that. And then a couple other projects we're working on. We have a script that we have some interest in. It exists in sort of the same world, thematic world. It's sort of a supernatural comedy. So it's not so much a horror comedy as it is like a sort of a supernatural stoner comedy that we're really excited about. That hopefully we'll be shooting come the new year. Which is a lot of fun, and it's a real gut buster of sorts. We're just gonna keep on keeping on, and people can check us out at drgodcomedy.com for show info and for the latest on, you know, what we're up to. We're still churning out stuff and performing regularly.
Great. Well, there you go. Keep your eyes open for them. Check the website, check the movie, and of course, most importantly, watch Mockpocalypse every Thursday on the Axis Cable Channel. Dave, thanks a lot, man.
TV. Yes. Hey, thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate having me on.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.